This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, June 4th, 2020, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead this hour, a Spanish-language journal published at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith is now in its 12th edition. And it came out in 2020, even though students and staff had to work remotely and apart from each other while finishing the project. We'll also learn about virtual observations of Black Music Month this June and more. A note about our show today and our show tomorrow. We have new material both days, but we are putting the program together with earlier than usual deadlines. We will not have the updates from the governor's press briefings today or tomorrow, but you can, as always, keep track with the latest developments and announcements regarding the virus at the COVID-19 update page at KUAF.com and through our morning newscast with Antoinette Grajeda at 5:30 and 7:30 Monday through Friday. We'll return to our usual deadlines and format on Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large. And you can also stay in touch with Ozarks at Large when you'd like on your schedule by subscribing to our free podcast through services including Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. You can also ask your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large to hear the most recent edition of our show, and you can always go to ozarksatlarge.com to find material, including entire shows there. And wait, there's more. You can have links to highlights from the show emailed to you every day by signing up for our free Ozarks at Large email newsletter. You can sign up at KUAF.com. This is Ozarks at Large. For about the last week, the governor's daily coronavirus briefings have included information about the growing number of COVID-19 cases in Northwest Arkansas's Latinx community, which makes up a large portion of the poultry industry workforce in our region. According to the latest report from the Arkansas Department of Health, which was released Tuesday, there are 412 active cases of coronavirus in the state's poultry plants, while 228 workers have recovered. Of the active cases, nearly 72% are Latinx workers. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek takes a closer look at some of the issues that have contributed to the rise of coronavirus cases in the Latinx community and what state and community leaders plan to do about it.
Let's go back to last week. Here is Arkansas Secretary of Health Nate Smith on Tuesday, May 26th.
Overall, 10.2% of our cases have been Hispanic. But I would like to say, of the 150 community cases from yesterday, a much higher percentage are Latino. We have 42% of our cases from the last 24 hours.
Here is Dr. Smith on Wednesday, May 27th.
We have had a number of occupational clusters. Most of them have been in the poultry industry. We've had a total of 301 cases associated with the poultry businesses, and 220 of those are active.
And again on Thursday, May 28th.
Of the cases in Benton County, 76% of those were in Rogers. And of those 85 new cases in Benton County, 85% of them are from the Latino community. In Washington County, 80% of the cases were in Springdale, and 40% of the new cases, the 25 new cases in Washington, were in the Latino community.
Finally, here he is on Friday, May 29th.
As we've mentioned before, many more in the Latino community have tested positive than was previous. Of our active cases, 25% are Latino.
What do we want? Workers' rights!
Just a few hours after that briefing, Venceremos, a social justice group focused on the rights of poultry workers, staged protests outside two local poultry plants.
We are here outside the George's poultry plant, the hatchery in Springdale, Arkansas.
That's Magali Licoli. She's the co-founder and lead organizer of Venceremos.
We are here because there is many multiple outbreaks happening in these plants. And so a month ago, basically, we came here to deliver worker petitions, and the workers were already screaming and yelling for protections. And we saw that we wanted to prevent the outbreaks that we are seeing right now.
Licoli says in the petitions, workers wanted the company to be more transparent and to provide widespread testing, as well as paid sick leave, paid quarantine, and an increase in wages.
The companies were acting late, and the companies are pretending, basically, that they are caring for workers because they, even though if they have placed partitions between workers, workers are still working shoulder to shoulder. So the partitions are not even proven to contain the spread of the virus inside the plants.
According to the most recent numbers reported to the Arkansas Department of Health this past Tuesday, June 2nd, there are 14 active COVID-19 cases at the Georges Poultry Plant in Springdale and 114 active cases at the company's Ozark Mountain Poultry Plant in Rogers. Licoli says poultry workers are essential, not expendable, and the protests are about that as much as they are about bringing awareness to the growing number of cases at the facilities.
So whenever we think or whenever we talk about this, we really need to rethink the expectations of productions during this pandemic. We really need to assure that these workers are protected. But right now, what we are seeing right now is that these companies care more for the profits and productions rather than for the workers. And the same happens with the government. They are not protecting workers. They are demanding that these companies remain open despite of the outbreak. So that is just going to lead us to a catastrophe in that work communities and in the workers' health, too.
Because of the number of cases in some of the poultry plants in the region, Licoli says the facilities should shut down, deep sanitize the buildings, put all workers in quarantine, and provide company-wide testing for workers to find out how many people are truly affected.
And of course, I mean, there's going to be a decrease of volume in productions, but that's what we need to do to overcome this pandemic.
We reached out to Georges for comment regarding Friday's protest outside its facility, but have not yet heard back. On its website, the company outlines the safety measures that have been put in place since the start of the pandemic in Arkansas, as well as information about enhanced employee benefits, many of which were listed in the Venceremos petitions. According to that statement posted on May 18th, all those policies have been in effect since March. After rallying outside the Georges facility, Venceremos protesters then caravanned to the Tyson Foods plant on Berry Street in Springdale. According to the latest numbers from the health department, there are 43 active cases of coronavirus spread out among five different Tyson plants in Springdale, Rogers, Dardanelle, and Grannis. On Monday, the company, which has more than 24,000 employees in the state, announced it would conduct facility-wide COVID-19 testing at its processing facilities and other operations in Benton and Washington counties, which have both seen a significant spike in positive coronavirus cases since the state initiated a broader testing initiative last month. The announcement came after several poultry business leaders met with Governor Asa Hutchinson ahead of his daily coronavirus response briefing, which he held at Mercy Hospital in Rogers.
Tyson's is moving to testing every worker in the plants in Northwest Arkansas. Whenever you look at Simmons Industry, they have health centers at their plants that will help take care of their workers. They are testing not just employees, but they're testing applicants. As they come in for a new job, that way they make sure they don't have a new employee that will expose other employees. They're setting up best practices within the facilities themselves to keep the workers safe. They're providing health care, and they're doing an extraordinary job.
The governor said people should feel comfortable that these poultry companies and others in the state, like Butterball and Cargill, are working hard to keep the food supply chain moving while taking the necessary precautions to keep their workers healthy. Health Secretary Nate Smith added that his department is working closely with the companies as well and will continue to do so.
And we're working very closely with a number of those industries. We're offering testing, contact tracing. In many cases, they're doing a great job of partnering with us on that.
Smith said he did speak with representatives from Georges, specifically about the Ozark Mountain Poultry Plant in Rogers, which so far has seen the highest number of coronavirus cases of any plant in Arkansas, despite putting in safety measures several weeks ago.
Doing things right in terms of workplace doesn't mean that that none of your workers are going to get infected because they still go home and they're in the communities as well. They've listed a number of things that they've done and are continuing to do to try and minimize the risk of COVID-19 spreading at the work site itself, but also providing additional education that's both language and culture appropriate to help them protect themselves when they go back home to their communities.
Smith, Governor Asa Hutchinson, incoming Interim Secretary of Health Dr. Jose Romero, and Chair of the Arkansas Economic Recovery Task Force Stuart Walton also met with leaders from minority communities in the region. Magali Licoli says she attempted to contact the governor's office several times regarding the meeting, but was not contacted back. Here she is in a video posted to the Venceremos Facebook page.
And it was crucial for us to meet with him today so he could listen to the stories and why it's so important that he acts immediately to prevent the spread of the COVID-19 in our communities and also to stop risking more workers of getting sick.
But the governor's office did invite Maria Raith to the meeting. Raith is the founding executive director of Arkansas United, an organization that focuses on advocacy and services for immigrant communities.
It was a small meeting, and the governor gave us a full hour of his time, which was appreciated. For those of us who were in the room, which was a mix of Latinx individuals from media, from business, from the community, and then the Consul General for the Marshall Islands was there as well.
Raith says she led the discussion with the governor by pointing out the state's shortcomings and providing information about the coronavirus outbreak in multiple languages.
Arkansas is an English-only state, and there were quite a few challenges and hurdles in the early weeks of this pandemic to even get information out in languages besides English. Or to engage ethnic media or coordinate or collaborate with community-based organizations in ways that would have let our community know how serious and have the same right of access to information as everybody else.
Raith and others were initially surprised by the low number of coronavirus cases in the Latinx community, given that many of its members are essential workers in the poultry industry, construction, and service industry. She says many of those people were showing up to work without getting information about personal protective equipment, social distancing, and testing services.
And I will say early on, our community so much so thought that And we heard this over and over again from our workers. They really wondered if coronavirus was real or if it was just a rumor from a government that has been pushing enforcement for 4 years and a government that they didn't necessarily trust.
Raith says many immigrants were also left out of the Federal CARES Act economic stimulus package, which added to that mistrust.
And we will say that our community, as a result, many folks did continue to socially gather and did not practice social distancing. And there were family gatherings or large groupings of families that would go together in shopping to parks and such, as is very customary for us, again, because of this lack of information and awareness.
Thanks to the recent expansion in COVID-19 testing, some of it specifically targeting the Latinx community, Raith says they're finally getting an idea of the real number of cases on the ground. And she adds, going forward, the state government can't tackle the situation alone.
We really need to engage community-based organizations, social influencers in our community, and other partners if we have any hope of curbing these trends and really being able to get a handle on this crisis for all communities in Arkansas.
Raith says the state has made commitments to more testing and increasing the number of bilingual medical professionals and contact tracers. She's also encouraged by the state's collaboration with employers on both of those fronts.
But we do need a disinterested party like the Department of Health to own the process.
According to Raith, the governor did mention putting some of the funding the state received through the CARES Act into infrastructure and programs that address equity issues. But she says they didn't discuss any particulars aside from creating coronavirus testing partnerships with poultry plant employers.
You could tell that there was a feeling from both the governor and the leadership of the health department and even health leaders that joined here from Northwest Arkansas that maybe they were under the impression we weren't taking the issue seriously enough, or that maybe there were cultural reasons that were manifested and it really was an important education moment that all of us shared in really lifting up that this wasn't about culture.
It's about the unique challenges facing their community. From Latinx individuals being more afraid of losing their jobs than the virus itself, to the lack of information in the first few weeks of the outbreak. Wraith says all those issues combined made people feel like they couldn't rely on the state for assistance.
So we just had to do what we always do, which is show up for work.
While it was gratifying to meet with state leaders, Wraith says some of the things brought up during their conversation prove that minority community leaders still have a lot of work to do to convey the inequities in the state and the repercussions of the state's policy decisions.
Now, that said, I do think there's a willingness to continue the conversation and move forward. But I do feel coming out of this urgent meeting, right, this urgent visit, and then even coming out of the weekend of protests, I would have liked as an activist to have seen maybe more commitments to action and to programs. And I felt we left the conversation with a commitment to continue conversation and dialogue, which is important. But I do think that we're talking about people's lives.
Wraith says she's committed to following up with the state leaders who are present at the meeting to make sure the discussions they shared are turned into meaningful actions.
I do think it's going to be important that the state look to put its money where its mouth is with expending of resources. And then the state does follow through with programs and really put a real timeline along some of this.
As far as the protests organized by Venceremos, Wraith says she's proud of the workers' rights movement in Arkansas and believes all strategies that lift up workers' voices are needed to share the message in as many ways as possible.
It was no surprise to us as an immigrant rights group that we would be disproportionately affected as communities of color because there's still a lot of inequities in our laws. And one of those is Arkansas being a right-to-work state. And there is definitely a culture here that permeates as a result where workers are afraid to even talk about their rights or what they might need or their concerns in regards to information because they're afraid of losing their jobs.
We also reached out to the representatives of Butterball and Cargill. Butterball's plant in Huntsville currently has 30 active cases of coronavirus, according to the Department of Health. The plant employs roughly 800 people. The company says it implemented daily temperature screenings mid-April, once thermometers and PPE for temperature checkers became available. But they began working to secure PPE as early as February. While Butterball isn't planning any mass testing at its facilities, company insurance does cover testing for those who want it. Meanwhile, the Cargill plant in Springdale employs about 1,200 people and currently has 48 active cases of COVID-19. Like Butterball, Cargill has implemented additional safety protocols in its facilities and is offering expanded employee benefits and bonuses. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
We called and emailed Governor Asa Hutchinson's media liaison to find out what the state plans to do following its meeting with minority community leaders on Monday, but as of yet, we have not heard back.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Still to come on this edition of Ozarks, celebrating Black Music Month virtually. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda talked with Anthony Ball about music moves. That's in about 20 minutes. On this edition of Ozarks at Large.
In the 1970s, Peter Singer was galvanized by news reports about refugees in South Asia.
West Pakistani refugees fleeing West Pakistan.
My wife and I started giving 10% of what we earned to Oxfam.
What it means to truly live our principles and why doing so is much more difficult than we realize this week on Hidden Brain.
Hidden Brain, Saturday afternoon at 3 and Sunday morning at 6 on 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. Late last month, the latest edition of Azares, a Spanish-language literary journal published by students at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, became available, still published in the midst of a pandemic. This week, we reach Mary Sabani, associate professor and head of World Languages Department at UAFS, and asked her about the journal and the student she supervises for its creation. She joined us from her backyard via Zoom. She says the inspiration for the journal came a few years ago.
I noticed we didn't have a place where the voices of the Latino community could be expressed in a way that was artistic, in a way that really showed the richness of Hispanic culture. And I thought, well, you know, let's do this. Let's get a literary magazine where people can express their poetry. We can publish photographs and art that really just shine a light on this Latino spirit. So yeah, that was like the seed of the thought right there was, let's do this, let's get this started. There isn't anything else in the region. University of Arkansas in Fayetteville doesn't have one, and they're real supportive of us actually. So the first one we published in 2008, and little by little we've been growing a greater reader base. This year we had a lot of submissions that were international. We had submissions not just from Fort Smith and Van Buren and Little Rock, but we also had submissions from Brazil and from Mexico, and even a Mexican writer who's currently living in Germany. So it's just been really interesting seeing how this magazine has made the world smaller somehow, bringing all the people together who love this sort of expression, literary expression.
How has it changed since 2008 to now? I mean, any literary journal, right? You get a couple of editions under your feet, more people know about you. Has that been sort of the trajectory?
Yeah, and definitely it's been a learning experience. We've been learning how to be better editors. We've been learning about timelines and just the strategic approaches to getting everything done by certain deadlines. Probably the biggest change that happened was a change that occurred about 3 years ago when we began collaborating with Katie Harper, who is, she teaches the publication and design class at the university. And so her students, as the main project for her course, they meet with us in different teams. We're the clients. They create layouts and cover design for us. We choose the top four, and then they do a whole pitch for their design, their cover art, and then the editorial board makes a final selection. And I tell you what, the caliber of the layout, design, and cover art, and then the interior, the watermarks that contribute to the flow of the design throughout the book, that's just like through the roof. I was talking to Katie the other day and I said, she asked me if we wanted to do it again next year. And I was like, yes, we cannot stop this. This is working so well for us. And the students get that wonderful experience too of seeing what this is like, having a final product that's in the real world and that's getting distributed nationally and internationally.
How can people find it?
So we're on the website. So if you go to the UAF website and type in Azahares, it'll take you right to it. You can Google it. And it's also there's a platform called Submittable. And that's used by a lot of literary magazines, English and Spanish. And if you do a search on there, you'll find us also.
What will we find in this most recent edition?
Oh, we have... Okay, so my favorite, I have two favorites in this edition. The centerfold art was a digital photograph by one of our students, Alexandra, and she had this amazing cityscape of Bogota, Colombia, where she went the last summer, you know, before all the COVID stuff started. So it's just beautiful, and it just gives this flavor of like, yes, I am that world-embracing vision that we're trying to portray with a magazine. So that's one of my favorites, just beautiful. And then the other one is a poem by Julie Corrales. And she is half Mexican, half Costa Rican. The poem is entitled, actually I have it here, "To the girl sitting on the ground outside the office bathroom her mother was cleaning on the night I was working late." Hmm. And this poem has hope. It has this connection. It conveys the possibility of, yeah, we have, as a Latino community, we're in a demographic that is socioeconomically in the lower strata in the United States. That's just how it is. Not everyone, mm-hmm. but there's a large percentage. And that there's that hope for making a life that's better than the one you knew before. And it's this voice, the narrator is addressing this poem to this little girl and saying, "I see you. You don't have to be ashamed. I was there once. I remember coming and working late with my mother." So I'm totally not doing the poem justice because it's beautiful. You really just have to read it. But I think that's my favorite one from this edition. Not to say that our students' poems aren't awesome, because they are also awesome.
Was it any different producing it this year?
Oh, because of the COVID-19.
Yeah.
It was quite different, the latter half. Generally, we try to get it published by April and out and distributed to the community. But with COVID-19, that was definitely delayed. The students that were working on the designs were working remotely. So when in previous years, we could take a hard copy and walk it over, because generally the students are not bilingual. So if there's issues with, we want this photograph to complement this poem, we have to make sure that we let them know. And oh my gosh, it was just, can you tell I'm having like repercussions from the, that was definitely made it harder.
But thankfully, it got done.
It got done. We were a little late in getting it out. We were hoping to get it out at the beginning of May, and it didn't go out until the end of May. But I think another thing that made it a little different this year with COVID-19 was the fact that we were all, I think, a little bit more conscious about the impact of the writing during this time. Like, we were thinking, this magazine is always just a stellar object of inspiration. I'm totally not biased. But this year especially, I think we've needed some sort of a little bit more positivity, perhaps, I could say, out there. Yeah.
I have to ask about the name of the literary journal.
Yeah.
You pronounce it better than I could. I wouldn't mind if you'd say the name again and tell me, translate it for me.
Sure. The title is Azahares, and it means orange blossom. The azahar is that the little white flower. I don't know if you're familiar with orange blossoms. Very fragrant, very small, very innocent looking, but boy, do they pack a fragrance punch. And so the azahar is a symbol of, it's used everywhere. It's like an iconic flower in Hispanic tradition. It appears in wedding bouquets. It appears in the crowns of quinceañeras. It's just, you know. So there's a play on words also with the word azahar. So azahar with an H is the orange blossom. Azahar without an H is like the roll of the dice in destiny. And so that play on words was also something that as Spanish speakers, we really appreciated in the creation of that title. Yeah.
What can it mean for the students, for the campus community, to have a literary journal that's in the Spanish language, which is not the majority language in our region or on the campus or in the state, and is still somewhat underrepresented in our conversations. What can it mean to the people who participate and read it?
Well, what I hope it does is that it gives individuals of Hispanic descent who identify with the Latino tradition, that it gives them a voice, a space where they can see, hey, somebody like me is writing and getting published, is doing art, and that's getting published. Somebody like me can do it, so I'm going to try to do it. That's what I hope for our students, at least. And it, and that aspect of professionalizing our students, so when they graduate with their Spanish degree from the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, they also have this possibility of putting something quite unique on their resumes as they go off to graduate school or as they go off to work in the community. This is something that not everybody can do. So the opportunity that we're providing for our area, I think, is quite important. And then for the greater community, I think it is awesome that someone in Spain or in Mexico or in Costa Rica sees a publication from Fort Smith, Arkansas, that is valuing the Spanish language and Latino culture. I think it is awesome that from Fort Smith, Arkansas, home of Fulbright scholarships and Walmart, that we're hoping at least to be in touch with all aspects of our American culture. You know, it's not just white. We've got more.
I'm wondering, you were mentioning the difficulty or the bigger challenges during COVID because not all of the layout students are bilingual and trying to make that communication. As you and I talk on the first day of June, we've had a difficult year. And it's become more difficult, it seems, in just the last few days. But I wonder if this is a metaphor, and maybe I'm grasping at straws, but the fact that here were people who perhaps couldn't speak the same language, but you communicated, you put together a project that included a poem of hope and artwork, that maybe in these tough times in early June 2020, we can use that as some sort of inspiration that things will get better again?
Man, it is the human spirit and the resilience of the human spirit, yes, that we can put things together. And yes, we have challenges. And yes, there are hardships. And yes, there's suffering. But art has a way of uplifting. And it transcends language in a way. Brings people together, like laughter does, right? We always say laughter brings people together. When you can laugh together, you aren't enemies. When you can laugh together, you don't have to be afraid of somebody who looks different than you or who speaks a different language than you. And I think art and literature, they do the same thing. They bring people together. They help you see a different side. They help you see, hey, this person had a hard time. They made it. I'm having a hard time, but okay, I'm going to make it too. I feel like I'm probably a little bit idealistic. This is my baby. And I love, I'll tell you what, probably my favorite part of this whole process of having a literary journal housed at our university are the responses that we get back from the poets and the artists when we send out the acceptance letters that they've been accepted for the next edition, the next publication. I just love that. That's totally my favorite part. The excitement. We had one year, a young man from New York wrote back and said, this isn't the first time that this has happened. And I'm so excited. And since then I've noticed, because he's written other things for us in subsequent years, that he's gotten published in other magazines too. So, yeah.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us. And tell the birds in your yard thank you too, because they've been wonderful to hear as well.
They are pretty noisy back here, but yeah.
Mary Sabani, Associate Professor and Head of World Languages Department at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, talked with us via Zoom earlier this week. The journal, as always, can be found at a link at class.uafs.edu. We also have a link at ozarksatlarge.com. This is Ozarks at Large. A Northwest Arkansas-based nonprofit called Music Moves is celebrating Black Music Month with a series of virtual performances. Earlier this week, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda spoke via Zoom with director Anthony Ball to learn more. To begin their conversation, Anthony Ball discussed the nonprofit, which officially got its start last fall.
Music Moves is a platform to promote Black music through performance and curriculum. We go into the schools and kind of we have a curriculum. We teach the kids, kind of give them a background of where it all kind of started. And we go back to the field hollers from the slavery era. And we pull them back to music they love, with whether it's Cardi B or Jay-Z or whoever. So, but this was a particular celebration that we wanted to bring to our community. This is a celebration that was actually started by President Jimmy Carter, June 7th, 1979. So this is a fairly older tradition that we want to bring to our area. Like we're all from the South. I'm from West Memphis, Arkansas. We got our board members are from all over the place, but this is something that we really care about, and we know that this area is a pretty unique area. We love the arts here. We love culture here. So it was a unique opportunity to celebrate our heritage while including our entire community, which is predominantly white. So it was an awesome time to kind of do that and kind of bring awareness around June Black Music Month.
So how will you be celebrating Black Music Month this year?
So it's a unique opportunity this year because of COVID-19. We do a lot of live performances, but this year we went into the studio and recorded all of our live performances. So we have a website, www.musicmovesar.com, and we also have a Facebook page, Music Moves, and we'll be streaming all of our live content online this month. So between Friday and Sunday, every week we'll have programming going on. So we partnered up with a radio station here, Kiss 105.3. We'll be doing their hip hop series. We took over their hip hop series and put a live band with their hip hop artists. They usually do a Freestyle Friday, so we did that with live band, live instrumentation. So really, really cool. Every Saturday we're doing a tribute to genres, different genres. So we have a blues edition, we have a soul, R&B, and jazz mm-hmm. edition, and on Sundays we're doing gospel music. So there's an opportunity for everybody to be a part. It's family friendly. We're really excited because we were going to get bigger artists to help us celebrate, but we kind of wanted to use this as a time to kind of bring together our state. So we actually had artists from all over Arkansas come to Fayetteville, Arkansas, in our studios here and do these performances. So I got people from Blountsville, Arkansas, Camden, Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas, Conway, Arkansas, Jonesboro, Pine Bluff, all over the place and celebrating Black Music Month.
And this is the first time that you have done this because, like you said, you just started in the fall as a nonprofit.
Yes. So we've unofficially celebrated before. And we've even, there was an organization that was actually a Black Music Month committee when I first moved to the area in 2007. My friend Gwen Kelly, she had me a part of it because I would always be music director for some of her events. So she's moved away. And it was something that I always wanted to kind of bring back to the area and kind of raise the bar for it. She kind of passed the baton over to us. So we've always kind of unofficially been a part of it. And then years span, it kind of dwindled off. And we just kind of want to come back with a big bang.
Given the state of the country currently with, you know, the pandemic and protests, what does it mean to be able to organize and host a celebration amidst all of that?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. So I had a meeting with my marketing team last week, and this idea was kind of raised, like, how can we celebrate and how can we keep posting about, because we had this was a week after we just recorded all of our hip hop stuff, and there was another group that was out of Blauvel. It's a black quartet gospel group, and this picture was it was coincidentally like all black men. And one of my social media girls, she was like, man, I just couldn't post this morning, and I was just I wanted to bring it to you guys. Like, how do we do this and don't brush over? And it's the same thing for us. Like, for the black community, we've always been in the pandemic. We've always been in a protest. We've always been to these visuals. This is our life that we live. I think that some of our other like white allies and brothers and sisters, they're catching on to these atrocities and these tragedies that's happening in the communities. But this is something that communities have had to deal with for a long time, and for us, this is an energy that we're putting out to kind of combat all the negativity, all the negative narratives that's put out about our community. We want to combat that with all the stuff that we've done in the past, and bring value back to the black community, and show a piece of the contribution that we've had in America. And I say a piece of that because we've always looked at like music and sports and entertainment. We've brought so much other. And I think there's a lot of people that's talking about that and highlighting that. But for us, we keep doing what we're doing. We're doing the good work and we're fighting the good fight. I was at the protest in Bentonville last night, and I'll be at the Fayetteville one tonight. But this is a special opportunity for us because, like, music, I feel like music heals and music unites, and that's what it's always done. And for me, I say let the music do what it always do. Let us as a community, a diverse community, band together even more and keep fighting the good fight. You know, like, it doesn't stop because somebody goes down. You know, like, that's just a huge indicator of why we're doing what we're doing. The movement must go on.
That was Anthony Ball, director of Music Moves. He spoke with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda earlier this week. Black Music Month performances will be streamed every Friday through Sunday during the month of June. More information available at musicmovesar.com.
Welcome to 60 Second Civics, the daily podcast of the Center for Civic Education. I'm Mark Gage. American Indians govern themselves by their own tribal laws, treaties with the U.S. government, and by special laws passed by Congress. These laws did not recognize American Indians to be citizens of the United States. As a result, they did not have the right to vote. The first attempt to grant Native Americans citizenship came in 1887 when Congress passed the Dawes Act. The Dawes Act granted a tract of land and citizenship to those who were willing to give up their allegiance to their tribe. The law was strongly resented by most tribes. Finally, Congress passed a law in 1924 called the Indian Citizenship Act. This law fully recognized Native Americans as citizens of the United States. The law also gave Native Americans the right to vote in federal elections. That's all for today's podcast. The show's theme song is Complacent by Cheryl B. Englehart. You can find Cheryl online at cbemusic.com. 60 Second Civics, where civic education only takes a minute.
This is Ozarks at Large. NPR has announced the finalists and honorable mentions of its Student Podcast Challenge. Students from across the country in grades 5 through 12 were invited to have their teachers submit the podcast they created. Three students in our area were named finalists or received an honorable mention. We've been airing their podcast on Ozarks at Large this week. And today we hear a podcast created by Elise McClay, who attends Thaden School in Bentonville and was named one of the 15 finalists in the high school category. She tells us more about the culture shock of arriving in the United States to find out the country is not solely made up of Hollywood, cowboys, and big cities.
I was 9. I had just woken up on a Saturday morning. My parents had gotten me my favorite cereal, Cocoa Puffs. I never, ever got Cocoa Puffs, so I knew something was up. My little brother, my little sister, and I were sitting at the table shoving spoonfuls of chocolate cereal into our faces when my mom told us, "We're moving to America." I gasped and choked on my chocolate cereal. This was the greatest thing I had ever heard. Straight away, my mind went to, "I've seen movies where Texas is full of cowboys and everyone else is a celebrity. Half of the U.S. is Texas and filled with farms, horses, cowboys, and cowgirls, and the other half is New York, Hollywood, and L.A. Oh my goodness, that is where Taylor Swift lives." Not long after moving to Bentonville, Arkansas, I realized not all of America is big cities. Bentonville is a small town with definitely no mega celebrities. It was a farm town, but it has grown a substantial amount since the rise of the company Walmart, which is the reason I'm here today. Same as my friend Jack Ibbotson, who also moved here because of Walmart.
I'm Jack Ibbotson from England. I'm 15.
Before moving here, Jack and I were both confused on where and what Bentonville, Arkansas was.
I was 11 years old. I didn't really expect much about Arkansas. Because, you know, I didn't even know it was a state at first. I did some research. Thought it was called Arkansas first of all, to be honest.
Jack and I both thought America would be exactly like what you see in the movies.
Oh, I thought it was going to be all like High School Musical. Like everyone's breaking into dance at school. Like parades going down the street. Like bands playing at football games. I did not understand football when I came over here. I was like... So he's supposed to go over the line like 10 yards, right? What? I got into it though. It's all good.
After being here a while, Jack realized America is not exactly like the movies.
Yeah, no one's breaking into dance or song here. So yeah, it's not like Zac Efron in High School Musical, isn't it? And I was expecting like everyone to have like 12 children because I watched like Cheaper by the Dozen like 6 times. I thought it was going to be like hot when I came over here because I'm just used to going to Florida and it's like 90 degrees all the time. Then we came like spring, but it was like 30 degrees in spring. I thought I was going to escape the cold weather from England, but no, I just brought it with me.
And when we realized this, we both had a perspective shift.
Let's think. Perspective is like thinking geometry, right? It's like how you look at a shape.
Yeah.
So it's like how I looked at America. U.S., the big U.S. of A. Well, actually, okay, so I thought it was going to be like big cities everywhere because like you've only seen like New York and stuff. No, it's like really rural in Arkansas. It's like farms everywhere, which that's what I'm used to in England, like farms everywhere. But I was like, I thought I was going to be moving to a city.
What I had learned about America through movies, music, and TV was not exactly true. I did, however, get to ride home from school in a yellow school bus, just like in the movies.
Podcast created by Elise McClay of Thaden School in Bentonville, one of 15 finalists in the high school category of the NPR Student Podcast Challenge. Several students at Thaden School participated in a week-long intensive called Radio Thaden, where they wrote and recorded their podcast for the contest. We'll have one more podcast from another challenge finalist on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. And this is 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Timothy Dennis mastered this Thursday edition of our program. Contributors included Susanna Sitek and Antoinette Grajeda. Our mid-show song comes to us from our friends at Red Barn Studios and the Fayetteville Roots Festival. Our theme is titled The First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. His most recent CD, Safe in Sound. Thank you so much for spending part of your Thursday with us. We will be back with you tomorrow at noon and 7. That's my dog, Taylor, that you hear there from my closet on Mount Sequoia. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Have a great rest of your Thursday.